Adolf Hitler hoped and prayed that he could be the Antichrist. He might have been a deranged maniac, but he actually knew a thing or two about what the Bible said. And as he went through Europe swallowing up nation after nation, he was convinced more and more that he would be this man. It's kind of strange, you know, he wanted to fulfill the scriptures that speak of the Antichrist's power and the Antichrist's reign. I wonder what he thought he was going to do about the scriptures that speak of Jesus returning at the end of all of it and casting the Antichrist right into hell. But, you know, like I said, Hitler was deranged. According to the book Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer, Hitler offered himself as a Messiah with the divine mission to save Germany. On one occasion, he displayed the whip he often carried to demonstrate that in driving out, this is a quote, in driving out the Jews, I remind myself of Jesus in the temple. And then he declared another quote, just like Christ, I have a duty to my own people. He even boasted that as Christ's birth had changed the calendar, so his victory over the Jews would be the beginning of a new age. What Christ began, he said, I will complete. Well, Hitler didn't get his wish. Not that he didn't still accomplish quite a bit of evil. 6 million Jews murdered. 1/3 of all the Jews in the world. And I've spoken about this on the podcast before. Why the devil wants all the Jewish people dead. And the devil's gonna keep on trying. Whether he's doing that through Hitler or whether he's working through the Antichrist himself, the devil's gonna keep trying. Now, thankfully, according to scripture, the Antichrist is not going to win either. He's going to be successful in killing 2/3 of the remaining Jews during that 7-year tribulation. He will not succeed in killing all of them. As he is conquesting the land of Israel during that time, he's going to be attacked by another nearby nation, a nation that we've been studying quite a bit here lately on the Cross References podcast, the nation of Egypt. And so on today's episode, you're going to learn 6 things about the Antichrist, including hints about his nationality and his love life. And you're also going to learn about God's plan for Egypt in the end times. There is actually a plan for Egypt during the Great Tribulation. And that plan involves opposing the Antichrist. Have you ever heard about that before? You are going to today on this episode of the Cross References Podcast. Welcome to the Cross References Podcast, a Bible study where we learn how every small piece of the Bible tells one big story and how they all connect to the cross and Christ. My name is Luke Taylor, and I read Revelation and Daniel side by side because I think these are the 2 key books of the Bible to understanding God's plan for the future and the end of the world. And I don't think you can really understand one without also holding on to the other. And there are 3 key chapters of Daniel that you need to understand if you want to understand the Antichrist. And these are Daniel 8, 9, and 11. Daniel 11 in particular is really interesting. It is the most specific chapter on Bible prophecy in the entire Bible. Daniel 11 talks about many things that a lot of them have already happened, but it talks about them in such detail, many people refuse to believe that it was even written before those things happened. It was written by Daniel back in Daniel's lifetime. It speaks of things that happened over the centuries following Daniel, and it is so precise. I mean, so detailed. A lot of people will deny that Daniel even could have written it. One interesting tidbit, in Daniel 11, a messenger angel named Gabriel brings Daniel news of 5 future kings. Now, for us in 2024, 4 of those kings have already lived and died. Ahasuerus, Alexander the Great, Antiochus the Great, and Antiochus Epiphanes. The 5th future king has not yet taken control, so that's why I say he's the future one. But one interesting tidbit, all of their names start with A. They're, like I said, Ahasuerus, Alexander, Antiochus, and Antiochus, they all start with A, and there's 2 of them named Antiochus, that's why I said that twice. The 5th one is also going to start with A, all right? It wasn't Adolf Hitler. The 5th one is the Antichrist. And so Daniel 11 is telling us about these 5 guys. We're skipping the first 4, the first four, because they've already happened. We're going to skip over the first four kings talked about, and we're going to skip over to verse 36. This is where Daniel starts giving specific details about the Antichrist. Some of these details can't be found anywhere else in the Bible. And I honestly think, if you have not studied this portion of Scripture already, I think then you might come away from this lesson today thinking about the Antichrist a little differently than you did before, because you're going to learn some new things about him. So we're going to look at six identifiers of the Antichrist today, okay? And that's quite fitting because I think he likes the number six. So one aspect, we're just getting into it here. One aspect of the Antichrist, and this is something that comes up every time that it talks about the Antichrist in the Bible, no matter where you go, it always talks about his mouth, by which I mean his big mouth, his ego, his pride, his love of talking about himself, his adoration of himself. And so we'll pick it up in Daniel 11:36, the Antichrist here. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. So the Antichrist is going to have such an ego, he will magnify himself above any others. And as I said, this comes up all the time when you study about the Antichrist. And it's very fitting because pride, after all, it was the first sin ever committed. Pride made the devil the devil. And pride is the most prominent description of the Antichrist throughout the Bible. Just his insane ego. It goes to such a degree that he blasphemes all other gods and he proclaims himself mightier than any god, including the true God. And so I don't tend to believe that the Antichrist is going to be from America, you know, like an American president or something like that. But I will say, I get really uncomfortable sometimes when I hear politicians or presidents who just constantly brag on themselves. They only want to talk about themselves. We've had two or three presidents in a row now that just want to talk about themselves all the time and brag on themselves. And I just, when I hear that, I cringe sometimes because like that is the Antichrist spirit right there. You know, not saying they're not the Antichrist, but I think it just kind of shows a spiritual corruption. And it's like a hint of what is to come, we might say. This verse says, what has been determined shall be done. Okay, this Antichrist is going to come. He's going to be such a powerful figure. There's going to be a lot of people on earth praying against him. Okay, he's going to seem so unstoppable that, you know, only God can really stop him. But it is going to happen. He's going to be given the earth for 7 years. This is the first seal judgment in Revelation. What has been determined shall be done. He gets the earth for 7 years. Now, there's not a certain amount of praying that's going to stop this because it's already been determined. This is what's going to happen. Now, Daniel 11:37. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall exalt himself above them all. I'm going to break this one down into a couple parts. I'll talk about the women thing in a minute. Let me focus on this part where it says he won't regard the God of his fathers or any God. So when you study the book of Daniel, it kind of leaves open two possibilities for the nationality of the Antichrist. If we go back to Daniel 9:26, I'm not going to read it because I'll just get on a whole tangent if I do that. But, and I think I talked about it on episode 50 of this podcast already, but Daniel 9:26, it says, the Antichrist is going to come from the people who destroyed the temple in 70 AD. Now, there's two groups that you could pin that on. You could say it was the Romans because they ordered it. So the Antichrist might be Roman or of European descent, we would say probably in modern terms. Another way it could happen is that he could be of the Middle Eastern people because they were the ones who carried it out. The Romans ordered it. It was Middle Eastern people who carried it out. And so, you could say it could go either way. You know, that the Antichrist basically has to be of either European or Roman descent, or he's going to have to be a Muslim or someone of Middle Eastern descent. All right. So that's why I'm saying I don't think he comes from America. I feel like Daniel kind of narrows it down to one of those groups. It's kind of ambiguous because we don't know which group, but it'll be of the people who destroyed the temple in 70 AD. So then we get to Daniel 11:37 here, it says he won't regard the God of his fathers. So again, like, who is that talking about? Who is the God of his fathers? Well, it comes down to whether, I think it comes down to this. What do you think the end times false religion of the Antichrist is going to be? The religion of the false prophet. Is it coming from Islam or is it coming from Catholicism? Because I think the Antichrist is coming from one of those roots, either from Islam or Catholicism. And it makes the point, you know, right here, he is going to regard himself higher than the God of his fathers, the God of Catholicism or the Allah of Islam. So again, it could go either way. But the point of this verse is just saying it. I'm not talking about the nationality specifically because I don't know which way it's going to go. But he regards himself so highly, he thinks so highly of himself, he doesn't even care about the God of his ancestors. So that's what it's telling us right here. So we just get a little clue there about his personality and his nationality. And then we learn also here about his love life. So let me get back to this part where it said he will not regard the desire of women. It's making a comment right there on the Antichrist's sexual desires. Okay, so you could take this a couple of ways. One, you could just take it that he doesn't care about the affection of women. Or some people take this as a hint that the Antichrist is going to be homosexual. And people have wondered about that for a long time. So it's very much a possibility. You know, 30 or 40 years ago, even 20 years ago, it just didn't seem like the world would be willing to fall in line behind an openly gay leader. You know, that seemed implausible. Barack Obama in 2012 or in 2008, he wouldn't even say that he was in favor of gay marriage because that would have made him unelectable. And let's see, that was 15, 16 years ago. And now in modern times, it's just that wouldn't even that you can be pro-gay marriage in the Republican Party and still get elected. So that's how much society has changed in the past 20 years. Yeah, would the world fall in line behind a gay leader today? Absolutely. You know, it's just amazing how quickly the world changed and how quickly that became accepted by the world at large. Actually, if you go back 4 years ago in America, one of the top candidates for president of the United States was a gay man. He's now in the president's cabinet. So that could be a possibility of where we're going with this Antichrist thing when it says he won't regard the desire of women. Another way of looking at it is not that he's gay. It's just that he's so self-absorbed that he just doesn't even really care about anyone else. And that is kind of also in line with what it's been saying throughout this section of verses. So you can take it either way. But we get a little hint about his love life right there, that he's apathetic or homosexual. We get a hint here about his religion. It says back here in Daniel, verse 1:1-8, "But in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses, and a god which his fathers did not know he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he shall act," and we're going on to verse 39, "he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge, and advance its glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and divide the land for gain." So now it's talking about a god that he does honor. And this is kind of confusing, because just a moment ago, it was saying he didn't care about anyone's god, okay? So that it makes this a little bit hard to understand. This right here is telling us that he is going to honor a god of fortresses. So here's my theory on what this means. The Antichrist, in order to appease some group of people, what he's going to do is he's going to show respect to their god as a way to get them to partner with him. And so again, it's kind of confusing because like this is the only verse in the entire Bible of all the verses on the Antichrist. This is the only one that ever talks about him having regard for some other god. So I don't really have like another scripture to help me shed light on this. My theory is like he's trying to get in with some crowd. He's trying to get some country to join him or help him. So he shows some kind of respect for their god. Okay. And it says a god of fortresses. Now, what would that be? Let's say he's of European descent. Let's say he's more like the Roman type of Antichrist. Okay. But perhaps he partners with a Muslim nation in some kind of conquest and he gives Allah the credit for it. So that could be what it's talking about here when it says a god of fortresses, that he'll honor a god of fortresses. Now, another theory I've read is that the god of fortresses just means that the Antichrist is placing all of his hope in his military power. I don't know if I buy that, but that's a possibility, I guess. Okay. So, you know, when we get to the Battle of Armageddon in Revelation and Jesus shows up, there's this moment where he shows up and the Antichrist, you know, he tells all of his armies to direct their firepower at Jesus. I'm like, you really think that's going to work? But, you know, it makes no sense to even try that unless that's his God. All his hope for power is placed in his military. You know, that maybe that's what it's talking about here. So we learn a little bit about the Antichrist religion, that he will honor a God of fortresses. And now we're going to learn about something about his enemies. This is the most interesting part of the section for me. Here's something that might surprise you about the Antichrist. Not every single nation on earth is just going to fall in line behind the Antichrist. There are actually going to be some who stand up to him and who refuse his rule. Now, I don't think it's going to be like a large number, okay? I would think the majority of nations on the planet are going to follow the Antichrist, maybe even 80 or 90%. I think the majority of them will. But there's also places in the Bible where it tells us that some of them will not. And they're going to be punished by him for it. He's going to lash out against them for not falling in line. But there will be some who resist him. I this is how I interpret the parable of the sheep and the goats there in Matthew. I think the sheep and the goats are actually talking about nations who either followed the Antichrist or opposed the Antichrist in Revelation. That could be a whole other lesson based on, like, all on its own. But that's kind of how I interpret that one. So anyway, we'll stay in Daniel 4 today. Daniel 11:40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. So it says here he's going to fight against the king of the south. If you're wondering who the king of the south is, it's actually very easy to figure out. It's undeniable whenever you read Daniel 11:40 in the context of Daniel 11 as a whole, because as I said before, this chapter has already given us specific information about four kings in the past. So when Daniel 11 was written, these guys of Ahasuerus and Alexander the Great and the Antiochuses, they had not been born yet. But by today, they have. And so there were all these kings of the north. And they, as you read Daniel 11, they had conflict after conflict with the kings of the south. And in all those stories, the south was Egypt. So whenever we read these verses at the end of Daniel 11, as the Antichrist goes to war with the king of the south, we can easily understand who he's talking about. It's talking about Egypt. So Egypt is going to be one of the countries that stands against the Antichrist and actually attacks his territory. So, and perhaps the Antichrist is located in Syria at this time, because that was where the north was as this was going on. But Egypt is going to be put down. When they resist, it says they are put down like a whirlwind, is what it said. So he's going to put them down. He's going to overwhelm them. And in verse 41, he shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand: Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So Egypt is, you know, sorry to say, because they're resisting him, but he's going to just wipe them out. And the glorious land that it spoke of right there, that is Israel. So Israel, if you look on a map, Israel is right in between Syria and Egypt. So every time these kings would have conflicts with each other, Egypt versus Syria, Israel was always caught right up in the middle of it. And that's going to happen again in the tribulation. Okay, so all of that gives the Antichrist an opportunity to invade Israel. So I would put this, what it's talking about here with Egypt, I would place this in the last half of the tribulation, probably towards the end, because at the midpoint of the tribulation, that's when the Antichrist turns on the Jewish people and he tries to conquer Israel. And it mentions that he overthrows some countries, but there's three of them that are going to be unaffected. It said Edom, Moab, and Ammon. And I can tell you why. Edom, Moab, and Ammon If you read through the Old Testament, they were frequently enemies of the Israelites. If you look at where those nations are today, those three make up just one country, the nation of Jordan. According to other books on prophecy in the Bible, the land of Jordan is going to be the one safe place for the Jews to hide from the Antichrist. Okay? This is when, you know, Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation, flee to the mountains and all that. That's what he's talking about, is when the Antichrist turns on the Jewish people and starts trying to wipe them all out. He says, flee to the mountains. But Isaiah says, if they will flee to Jordan, Edom, Moab, and Ammon, they can find refuge there. So if you, as you look through other books on prophecy in the Bible, like Isaiah, the land of Jordan is going to be the one safe place where they can hide out from the Antichrist. Israel and Jordan signed something called the Treaty of Peace in 1994. It stated, if either of those nations are attacked, the inhabitants of that nation, they can flee to the other one for safety. Isn't that amazing? That happened in 1994. And Bible prophecy is like being fulfilled right in front of our eyes. Things are just coming into place. We're seeing this alliance right now. Here's something else kind of cool. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about this. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Iran struck out at Israel. And that was happening as I recorded the previous episode. And now that's kind of, right now as I'm recording this one, those tensions have kind of settled down. But here's what was interesting about that little mini conflict. Iran's like, it's got a few nations in between it and Israel. But whenever they struck out at Israel, some of these Muslim countries that are right next to Israel, they actually became very protective. Like these drones were launched from Iran. They had to fly right over Jordan. And Jordan actually assisted Israel in shooting them down. I found this news article. It's from DW.com. It's not Daily Wire. It's some German news organization. DW.com. The headline said, "Why did some Arab countries appear to help Israel?" And it says, but what got a lot of attention was the fact that the Jordanian Air Force also stepped in to help. Jordan opened up its airspace to Israeli and U.S. planes and also apparently shot down drones that violated its own airspace. So that Jordan assisted Israel after this attack. Iran told Jordan, stay out of it, do not help. But Jordan helped anyway. And so we're seeing an alliance right now between Israel and Jordan. And the Bible says that is going to hold true even in the tribulation. The Antichrist is going to turn on the Jews. He's going to start trying to kill all of them. And Jordan is going to say, we will protect you. And the book of Isaiah, like I said, it says during the tribulation, they're going to go and hide out over there. They're going to hide at a city called Petra. That's what it actually says. They're going to hide at Petra. Petra is the most heavily protected city in the entire world. If you've watched Indiana Jones 3, The Last Crusade, if you've watched that, you have seen Petra. Okay, they actually go there at the end of that movie. It's like a city built into mountains and full of caves and stuff like that. It's very hard to get into. So if you can get in there, you can protect yourself pretty well and hold off. So Revelation 12 says, the Antichrist is going to try to smoke them out of Petra, or flood them out, actually. But he's not going to be able to do it. And so they're safe in there. If they can just hang out in there for a little bit, they're going to be safe. And so that's the story. As you read Revelation 12, that's what happens with the Jewish people. They flee from the Antichrist when he starts persecuting them. But, and listen, a lot of them are going to die. Actually, let me give you the math here. I find this really interesting. If you do the math on the number of Jews in the world, we'll start with World War II. Okay, at the time of Nazi Germany, there were 18 million Jews on Earth. Hitler killed 1/3 of them in the Holocaust. So he brought their number down to 12 million. It's been about 80 years since then. And so in the time since then, their population's grown a little bit. It's at about 14 million today. I'm just kind of speaking in rough, rounded numbers, okay? 14 million Jews on planet Earth. That's where we are right now. Let's say the end time started right now. All right? Starting with that number of 14 million. Well, about 1% of Jewish people are saved. And so if the rapture happened right now, 1% of them would be gone. That would leave 13.8 million.
Is that right?
Yeah, that'd be right. 13.86 million. All right. That would be 1% of all the Jews. All right. Then the seal judgments take place, the seven seal judgments in the book of Revelation, and 25% of the population at least is going to die from those. So if you take away 25% of the Jewish people, that brings you down to 10.39 million. Then you have the trumpet judgments in Revelation, and the trumpet judgments are going to take an additional one-third of mankind. So you take away 33% of the remaining Jews, and you're at 6.8 million. Then Zechariah 13:8 tells us that the Antichrist, when he starts killing the Jews, he's going to kill two-thirds of them. All right? So of that 6.8 million, you take away two-thirds of that, and you're left with 2.26 million. Now, that's a really interesting number to come to, because I read that Petra, the most heavily protected city in the world where these Jewish people are going to flee to hide from the Antichrist, Petra can hold about 2 million people. All right, so I know I just kind of went through some rough estimates there, but that's pretty amazing. The amount of Jews that Petra could hold are basically the same number of Jews who would be left if the tribulation started right now. Like I said, don't worry, guys, it's all coincidence, right? But it's just pretty amazing how that lines up. And there's something else we learn about the Antichrist from these verses, okay? The verses that we've been studying here in Daniel 11. We learn about a few of his enemies. We learn about two countries that are going to oppose the Antichrist, Egypt and Jordan. Now, as I said, Israel and Jordan, they signed the Treaty of Peace. That's what it was called, the Treaty of Peace, in 1994. I went to Wikipedia's entry on the Treaty of Peace, all right? It says this. The signing ceremony took place at the southern border crossing of Araba on the 26th of October, 1994. Jordan was the second Arab country, after Egypt, to sign a peace accord with Israel. All right, so Jordan and Egypt are the only countries that have signed peace accords with Israel, the same two nations that Daniel 11 says are going to oppose the Antichrist. Like I said, it's all a coincidence. I'll tell you something else about these verses before we go today. Let's read about the Antichrist's palace that's talked about here in Daniel 11. So verse 43. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also, the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. So it says he's fighting against Egypt there and he's plundering them. But then he gets news from the east. That's probably referring to China. Okay? If you go look at Revelation, the second to last judgment in the book of Revelation is that the Euphrates River dries up. And this paves the way for the kings of the east, like I said, most likely China, maybe some others like Japan or India, they could be coming too. But the kings of the east come along and they bring an attack against the Antichrist. Or perhaps China is making a play for Israel, but the Antichrist does not want to let them have it. So the idea of the tribulation, it's not this idea that he just gets 100% of all the nations on the earth to join against him. To join with him against Israel. A lot of people think that because of a verse in Zechariah 12, and I think they're taking it a little bit too literally over there. That's not the testimony of the rest of Scripture. There are going to be numerous nations who actually oppose and rise up against the Antichrist. Now, because God has handed the world over to the Antichrist for 7 years, they're not going to win against him, okay? But they're not going to submit to him either. And so by the end of that 7 year period, it looks like he's looking pretty weak by the end of the tribulation. He's probably panicking. Okay. And so at this very end of the tribulation, China, it sounds like, makes a play for Israel. I'm assuming it's China, but it says the kings of the East. Okay, so I don't know who all that includes. I'm assuming China's part of that, though. And a lot of people question where the USA is when it comes to Bible prophecy, because, you know, we're such a big powerhouse on the world scene. It's a little interesting. You know, where are they in all of this? I think the U.S. is just kind of collapsed by this point. But here's what's interesting, though. China is another big powerhouse on the world scene. A lot of people don't really ask where China is in Bible prophecy. I think you can find it. I think it's referred to here as one of these Eastern nations, and they cross the dried up Euphrates River. So they're coming for the land of Israel. And the Antichrist panics about this. And so he goes back over to that territory to confront them, and he's going to fight over Israel. And I think this is all just really the Battle of Armageddon. It's all the armies of the earth gathering together. It says in verse 45, "And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him." So the verse gives us another detail there about the Antichrist. Right at the end of the tribulation, he sets up a palace in Israel near Jerusalem. But it's a very temporary palace. It's called a tent palace right here. And it's not getting finished, because once he meets up with China at Megiddo, okay, the Battle of Armageddon is going to take place, and that's the end. Jesus shows up, and it's all over. The Antichrist is obliterated. China is obliterated. Prophecy is fulfilled. Said it right there. "Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him." So we're going to close down in just a minute, guys. But that kind of wraps up my what I've been talking about here on Egypt over the past couple months. So we talked about Egypt so much here lately. And we finished this section. We finished the section of Ezekiel on the Gentile nations now. And now I'm going to start preparing for where we go next in our study of that book. We're going into chapter 33. And this opens up a huge section of Ezekiel, the rest of the book, which is going to be much more positive and much more future, like looking toward the future. So that's going to start in June. In the month of May on this podcast, I'm going to share something a little bit different. We're going to be sharing a conversation with my friend Nate Vineo. And Nate is the host of the Something to Gnaw On podcast. And we had a conversation. He kind of interviewed me about the book of Ezekiel. And he aired that a couple months ago, but he's given me permission to share it with you all right here. And you know what, guys? I've spent so much time inspecting like the trees of Ezekiel. Nate really just brought me back out to look at the whole forest. And so I want you to listen to it, because, you know, you might be saying, "Oh, I've heard all this stuff. I've been listening to the podcast. I already know what Luke thinks of Ezekiel." But as I talked to Nate Vineo on that podcast, there's some like insights that came up, you know, things that he said, things that even I said that I had not considered when I was working through Ezekiel on my own. But when we put our heads together, like a lot of good stuff came out. So make sure you're subscribed to this podcast so you can get that conversation. It's going to start next Monday, and that's what's going to air for 3 weeks during the month of May. I'm going to take off the holiday week of Memorial Day and then come back in June, and we'll start the next major section of Ezekiel with chapter 33. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, my email is crossreferencespodcast@gmail.com. So in closing, I want to read this quote from Bible teacher John Walvoord. It says, "Taken as a whole, Daniel 11, 36 through 45 is a description of the closing days of the times of the Gentiles, specifically the Great Tribulation with its world ruler, world religion, and materialistic philosophy. In spite of its satanic support, the world government fragments into sectional disputes and a great world war, which climaxes with the second advent of Christ. This brings the times of the Gentiles to close with the destruction of the wicked rulers who led it." And Pastor David Jeremiah, he also says this about the chapter: "God gave us Daniel 11 to demonstrate in one little section of prophecy that when he says something is going to happen, it will happen exactly as he says it will." So Daniel 11's prophecies have already been proven by the past, so we can trust that the remaining prophecies will take place just as God said they would in the future. One thing that we are not going to know, unfortunately, as much as we study about the Antichrist, As much as we've heard sermons before and teachings before and read books on the Antichrist, we probably won't know who the Antichrist is. You know, I sometimes feel like our work in studying the tribulation and the Antichrist, I sometimes feel like it hasn't been for us. It's really for these people who are going to be left behind during the tribulation. Hopefully they can come across it and let it serve for them as a warning and an alarm not to follow this guy, not to take his mark. You know, perhaps somebody during the tribulation, perhaps they will find this podcast episode and they will learn about what's happened and understand what's coming. Because once the trumpet sounds and once we're caught up into heaven, we, the church, we probably won't even care about who the Antichrist is. While this chaos is unfolding down on earth, we're going to be attending something called the Marriage Supper of the Lamb. And we're going to be so joyous and happy, we probably won't even want to open up the basement door in heaven and like look down at what's going on the earth. You know, maybe you still can if you want to. I don't know. I'm just positing. Perhaps heaven is going to be so wonderful, we're just not going to care by that point. You know, have you ever just been so happy and so in love with Jesus that you could just throw on a worship song and kick back and you don't even care how much money you owe in bills. You don't even care what's going on in the world. You don't even care who the president is. You're just happy and contented. And that's how I think we're going to be in heaven for all eternity. So I hope you're ready for heaven. And I hope you're ready for the rapture. And I hope you're ready for the marriage supper of the Lamb. Because the question that should be on our minds as we're thinking about this tribulation, the question is not, who is the Antichrist? The question that should be on our minds is, what are we having for dessert? Thanks for listening to the Cross References podcast. This has been Luke Taylor, and I hope the Bible makes more sense to you after this episode.